Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Good day to you all. It's Oliver on the air until 10. It is now Monday, the 3rd of March, 2025. Spring is up and running. What a shame, there's a sense of foreboding in the air thanks to world affairs. But keep things parochial, I think, is the advice. It's the only way you'll be able to keep your head. Never mind the shaky world order. Send us your tips on staying sane, please, to us in the usual fashion, as you do every day on 087 032 32 32. That's a WhatsApp for north and south on the island. And you can also tap out a thought by email. That's oliver@rte.ie. Simple as that. Right and proper. Okay, we have a good show for you this morning. Kelly Harrington is live in studio. She's a woman who needs no further introduction, beloved in every corner of the land, a symbol of Dublin joy personified always, a true winner and a champion of dogs. And she is retired at 34. Or is she? Also rebuffing all offers of turning pro, we think. We'll find out as well what she's been doing since August 2024, when she made that history, becoming the first Irish woman to successfully defend an Olympic gold medal in any sport, and the first Irish boxer to win a gold, or to make even a gold medal fight in multiple Olympics, winning both, as it happens, and as we all know. And she also happens to be great crack. That's why we're looking forward to welcoming her into the studio once again. 51551 for your texts as well. We'll come to those 11 minutes that rock the world on Friday night, but you need entertainment, really, to get through your life in general. You heard there in the bulletin, the Oscars, the main story is Anora, that independent film, shocked everybody by winning 5 Oscars. I was rooting for Conclave. As you know, we couldn't stop talking about it in this programme since last July. Robert Harris, he wrote the novel and so on. And there's a mention coming up soon. But it didn't get there, and Timothy Chalamet didn't get the Oscar either. He would have been the youngest ever to win. He would have beaten, indeed, Adrian Brody's own record. But Adrian Brody, I think, has got a new record now as one of the worst Oscar speeches ever. They tried to play him off twice. He refused to go, and his speech was just dull, and he should have just left. It was poor, but he didn't care at that point because he knows he'll probably never be there again. Anyway, the best bit of the Oscars, it was hosted by Conan O'Brien, a man we're claiming as our own. This is the main Irish interest of the Oscars, because he said his DNA heritage tests show that he was 100% Irish. So the Ross na Rún star was obviously his main bit was the opening monologue, which was 18 minutes long. He should have been played off. Here's a flavour of some of the best bits. He starts off with Wicked, but watch out for the Conclave, which I think is the best joke of this set.
Wicked is nominated tonight in 10 categories. Yeah. 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 It's the perfect movie for anyone who's ever finished watching The Wizard of Oz and thought, sure, but where did all the minor characters go to college? I love The Brutalist. I really did. I didn't want it to end, and luckily it didn't. Conclave. I'm a Catholic boy. I love Conclave. Yeah. Yeah. Movie Conclave is nominated for Best Picture tonight. If you haven't seen Conclave, its logline is a movie about the Catholic Church, but don't worry. You got to hold on that one and just wait, yeah. And then it comes rolling back at you. Little fact for you, Anora uses the F word 479 times. That's 3 more than the record set by Carla Sofia Gascon's publicist. You tweeted what? Carla, if you are going to tweet about the Oscars, remember, my name is Jimmy Kimmel.
And that last one, of course, at the expense of Carla Sofia Gascon. She was the star of Amelia Prayers, who came under was huge controversy about her social media posts from the past, where she expressed pretty horrific views on Muslims, George Floyd, and diversity at the Oscars themselves. So it was I've noticed as well in the audience, she was having the joke explained to her by a translator, which didn't help her look at all. Anyway, Nora, it was the independent film. What's it about? It's about a romance between a sex worker and the son of a Russian oligarch, won 5 awards, and I'd watch it. Not many people have watched this film. The first 45 minutes is basically a fun romantic comedy, and then it turns into what I think is basically an extended episode, like a tribute to The Sopranos, and it is hysterical fun. And as Conan O'Brien rightly said, it's profane. But if you're into The Sopranos, I think you will enjoy this film. Sean Baker is the man behind the whole thing. He won the Best Original Screenplay for himself, Best Editing, Best Director, Best Picture. He wrote, directed, edited, produced the film. He is the first person ever to win 4 Academy Awards for the one film. Mikey Madison won Best Actress for her role, completely surprising the expectation that Demi Moore was going to win it. It was the comeback they were all hoping for. She'd won almost everything except for, I think, the BAFTA. Wasn't that the one that surprised them? And Mikey Madison, a virtual unknown, won that. I didn't really believe the Demi Moore comeback. I don't think you can make a comeback if your net worth is $200 million from the earlier part of your career. Walt Disney, the only other person to win 4 Oscars on the one night, but it was for 4 different films. So Sean Baker has that incredible record. He's also got a different record. This film, Anora, has the lowest domestic ticket sales in Best Picture history. So the fewest number of people paid in to see this film in America, in American cinemas, outside of the pandemic, of course. It made only $15.7 million in the US and Canada. The previous record holder for winning Best Picture, the fewest, the lowest cinema sales, basically, was The Hurt Locker, which had $17 million. At the time it won the Oscar. The film and the critic in the London Times, among other people, are slamming the win, saying just didn't deserve to win. Anora didn't deserve, unearned, simply reflecting the real politic of a movie industry has become wildly oversensitized to external criticism. Well, it's all about it. Used to be in the 90s, of course, the popular films won all the Oscars. Now it's the indie movies that very few people watch. Sean Baker has a great backstory himself. This is from Cultured Magazine just a month ago. In the year 2000, Sean Baker, the director, the guy who won the full Oscars, got clean from opioids, the opioid epidemic, of course, a very American story. He rebuilt his entire life from scratch. He was basically dismissed from his job in a TV show on Fox that he had created himself, lost most of his contacts in Hollywood, and stuck around New York while other people went off to make movies and so on in LA. And he thought he could survive one last attempt to become a filmmaker. He said, I did everything I could not to become a 9-to-5 job person. So he wanted to stay connected to the industry, even on the furthest fringe. How do you stay connected? He basically edited corporate videos. He copied VHS tapes for actors' reels. And whether he said there was always work in weddings, he said, and I worked for high-end wedding video company, Martha Stewart type stuff. That's obviously where he got his editing chops from, for which he's won an Oscar. So that is an incredible story. And Kieran Culkin was the other, no surprise there. He won Best Supporting Oscar, the Best Supporting Acting Oscar, and had a host of thank yous to share as he accepted his award. Thanked his manager, his mother, the writing director and co-star Jesse Eisenberg, and he had a special message for his wife, whose name is Jazz Charton. We mentioned her before. She loves Ireland, and she came over here and he spends a lot of time here, apparently. So Kieran Culkin, 42 years of age, he told a story about a chat he had with his wife after he won an Emmy Award last year for his role in Succession. And his wife made a promise that they would have a third child, and this became part of his Oscar acceptance speech.
After the show, we're walking through a parking lot. She's holding the Emmy. We're trying to find our car. Emily, you were there, so you're a witness. And she goes, oh, God, I did say that. I guess I owe you a third kid. And I turned to her and I said, really, I want 4. And she turned to me, I swear to God this happened. It was just over a year ago. She said, I will give you 4 when you win an Oscar. I held my hand out. She shook it. And I have not brought it up once until just now.
Good speech, in fairness. Take note, Adrian Brody. It's too late now. So there you go. There's the entertainment world. And unfortunately, we have to go back to World Affairs. I'm sorry. There is a fascinating piece, though, in the New York Times by Maggie Haberman, who calls herself the Trump whisker to find out, whisperer. She gets in under the background of the White House to find out what's going on. Those 11 minutes that rocked the world. This, of course, is the row that the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky had with Donald Trump and J.D. Vance. And the question hovering over Washington for the whole weekend is whether this whole confrontation, was it a spontaneous outburst, or was this whole planned verbal smackdown of the Ukrainian that they do not like. Lindsey Graham, who's a Republican senator very close to Trump, said he had an early morning meeting with Zelensky that morning and told him, look at this guy, you cannot get emotional with Donald Trump. You have to make sure you do not debate the security guarantee thing in public. Do not take the bait, is literally what he says. Don't get into a spat with Donald Trump. Don't get into arguments directly. So Zelensky, of course, didn't silence his concerns. He didn't bend the knee. And to Mr. Trump, who's come to expect a level of capitulation from almost everyone who has met him since election day, says the New York Times. And the debate continues. It looked to me like J.D. Vance, who's been fighting for relevance in this Trump White House, and this moment gave him worldwide currency. He needled the man who is war weary, of course. And the thing for me is just the at the very end of the confrontation when Trump sends everybody out of the Oval Office, J.D. Vance is smiling, so delighted with himself, and he claps Trump on the, his left arm, and the sheer delight in his face says it all. For me anyway. And so people with knowledge of what took place beforehand, though, according to the New York Times, said nobody wanted to blow up the deal. It was something that Trump really wanted to do. And it's only halfway through the confrontation, as you know, Trump finally blows up because he really wanted this minerals deal to be signed. So Americans get the minerals deal. And he says the Americans working on the ground is security enough that the Russians wouldn't come in while the Americans are spending billions of dollars and many years to dig up all of the natural resources in Ukraine. And he maybe has a point there. And Marco Rubio, who was silent during that whole confrontation, even though he was in the Oval Office at the time, has been out defending Trump fiercely. It's unusual because Rubio, as a senator in Florida, up until very recently, was a massive supporter of Ukraine and kind of against the grain of the Republicans. And he mentioned the Nobel Prize and said that Trump should win the Nobel Peace Prize, which is interesting because a few articles I read some weeks ago said that Trump is obsessed with winning the Nobel Prize. And this is why he's trying to shove through a bad arrangement for Ukraine to get peace. The Americans having those discussions with Russians infuriated the Ukrainians. So saying that Zelensky was riled up in this background piece and Lindsey Graham. They say it started out the moment Donald Trump, who greeted Zelensky and his car, sarcastically said, "Look, you're all dressed up." And of course, we know Zelensky hasn't worn a suit since the war started to show solidarity with his soldiers. So he wears that kind of military style clothing at all the official events, everywhere he's gone. But Trump and Vance have long disliked Mr. Zelensky, complaining he just wants the US to provide more money and resources. You have that whole phone call in 2019, which led to Trump's impeachment, of course, one of his two impeachments. But as they started the meeting without any cameras beforehand, apparently it was all very friendly and very nice. And then it was the energy change when the reporters started asking questions. Among them are the far right podcasters and YouTubers who are now being allowed into the White House press corps. And one of them rudely asked, would you not dress up and put on a suit, for goodness sake, in the Oval Office? So the tension was in the air. But it was the moment Zelensky says, "You've a nice ocean and you don't feel the war now, but you'll feel it in the future." And Trump says, "We won't feel it. We're very strong," and so on. And it blows up. So the interesting stuff that happens on the sidelines, of course, the Ukrainian ambassador to the US sitting beside them, she put her face into her hands. That image went viral, which would indicate that Zelensky wasn't planning to do that. And when the minute that we've seen, that the 11 minutes are over and the press leave, Zelensky and his aides go to the Roosevelt Room, which is where the signing ceremony was supposed to happen for the deal. Trump huddled with the aides in the Oval Office and the delegations were supposed to have lunch together. So what happened is Secretary of State Marco Rubio is sent out to the Roosevelt Room to say there's no more events, and the Ukrainians are then told to leave. One member of the delegation says, should Trump and Zelensky have a one-on-one to sort things out? And the US officials have no interest, and the Ukrainians are basically thrown out. But Trump goes ahead with the lunch that was meant in honour of Mr. Zelensky, went ahead without him. And he filled the empty seats where the Ukrainians were supposed to be with some of his aides, the civil servants who work in the White House. And they had an early spring green salad, rosemary roasted chicken and creme brulee. And they enjoyed it. And some of the Trump fans started posting on social media about the menu and deleting photographs they'd had with Zelensky earlier in the day. So it's extraordinary. Then Mr. Zelensky had to go off to Fox News. The Republicans were pressing him to apologise, but he didn't do that. And as you know, he's gone off to Britain yesterday where he got a big bear hug from Keir Starmer. So there is commentary that if Zelensky grovels to Trump, he'll forgive him, just as he forgave J.D. Vance, who's now the vice president. He once called him, he's now his boss. He called him America's Hitler, cultural heroine, which is one of the great slapdowns. And the Brits, it would seem, are hinting in the background they want Zelensky to apologise. But in the meantime, the whole thing has moved Britain very close to the EU again. It's made Keir Starmer, I think, one of the most influential figures in world politics. In the absence, anyway, of a German chancellor, especially with Macron, who's leaving office in 2 years and is very unpopular in France. But the key question is whether the Americans will cut off the military aid and funding support for Ukraine. I was reading that already since Trump came into office, the arms supply from the US to the Ukrainian front have slowed to a trickle. That was in the Washington Post. And I was also reading that The question is, can Europe fill the void if America pulls out? Generally, the answer is there's not enough unity to decide on it. Hungary has too much sympathy for Russia because of its Viktor Orban, who's very right-wing and undemocratic in many ways, and has vetoed some of the aid, or held it up at least for a time. And even if Europe could agree to the war, this is just a summary of stuff that I've been reading, they don't have the capability to produce the weapons without the Americans. Essentially, they'd have to purchase them from America like a private buyer. And of course, the purse strings are tightened because the economy is not going well in Germany and other places as well. The reaction of the right-wing movement in Europe is very interesting because they cheered Trump's election, and they're now quite confused. In Britain, the Tories and the Tory press, the Telegraph and so on, and even Nigel Farage, they're horrified with Trump's approach to Ukraine, and they're kind of not able to say it. And they support the Ukrainian. They obviously don't want Russia barking on the borders of Europe. And it's the same with the Italian far right. They're have a good relationship with Trump, but they're kind of a bit sorry for maybe what they wished for, I would say, at this point. And as Zelensky said, Ukraine needs America to guarantee peace and is willing to step down, but only in exchange for Ukraine joining NATO, which is maybe the thing. OK, well, it's 20 past nine. I do think we need to know what's going on with Italy's the Eurovision spat. As a little balm after that, Estonia's entry for this year's Eurovision said he never intended to offend Italy with a song which pokes fun at the Italians, so much so that the Italians are calling for the Estonian entry to be banned because it makes fun of the Italian stereotypes as coffee drinking, spaghetti eating mafiosi. The guy, he's a young fella, obviously representing Estonia, says Tommy Cash is his name. Interesting name. I love Italy and the utmost respect for the country. This is the entry that has spawned so much attention in Italy and much hate.
Me like to fly privati with 24 karati. Also mi casa very grandioso. Mi money numeroso. I work around the clock. That's why I'm sweating like a mafioso.
It's the sweating. It's the sweating that got them. It was a catchy tune.
No stresso, no stresso. It's gonna be espresso.
No stress, so it's got to be an espresso. That's very TikTok friendly. Apparently, he drinks coffee from a takeaway paper cup, which is perceived as another slight on Italian coffee culture. They can't take a joke whatsoever. But if you take anything from this, it's no stresso. We hope to have yourself an espresso. Maybe you'll be fine. OK, we'll have our chat with Kelly Harrington. She'll solve all the problems of the world for us, no doubt. 51551 is the text. Good morning.